We know our next guest to be a sober, serious journalist. Jani Scott was part of the New York Times Pulitzer Prize-winning team in 2000. In 2001, she came up with the paper's profiles of 9/11 victims. She wrote the book A Singular Woman, The Untold Story of Barack Obama's Mother. Well, now she's turned her eye on her own family, and who knew? Jani Scott is a descendant of a railroad baron, bankers, Boston Brahmins, who all settled in the rarefied air of Philadelphia's Main Line, several generations living together at Ardrossan Farms, which Jani describes as a British estate plopped down in John Cheever land. Candelabras, ballrooms, a staff of 16 in the servants' dining room. Her grandmother, Helen Hope Montgomery, was said to be the inspiration for Katharine Hepburn's socialite Tracy Lord in the Philadelphia story. She couldn't tolerate weakness. In this scene, she speaks French to her sister to intimidate reporters.
Oh, j'espère bien que ce n'est pas le smallpox.
Le smallpox?
Mais oui, va dire à maman de se dépêcher.
Oh, how do you do?
I'm Tracy Lord.
But Jani Scott's grandmother welcomed all and every adventure. Jani's exploration of her forebears lands on her father, Robert Montgomery Scott, handsome, charming, beloved president of the Philadelphia Museum for years. And as Jani discovered when she found his diaries, fully aware that his drinking was killing him. Her new beautiful memoir is The Beneficiary, Fortune, Misfortune, and the Story of My Father. We met up with Jani Scott in the Manhattan apartment she shares with husband Joe Lelyveld, former executive editor of The Times, and started by asking, what was it like to live at Ardrossan?
Well, it was this 800-acre stretch of spectacularly beautiful land with fieldstone farmhouses and barns and stables and a herd of cows. There was a swimming pool that had been built in the 20s in the woods. There was the remains of an old skating rink. There were tennis courts. My father had this pack of beagles, and in wintry days, we would sometimes take the beagles to exercise them along with toboggans and whisk down the hills on these toboggans chased by barking beagles and land in a heap at the bottom. My father called that toboggling.
There was also Helen Hope, grandma. Your grandfather, her husband, had gone to school with Philip Barry, who wrote the Philadelphia story. Was she the role model for Tracy Lord?
My grandmother is a very charismatic, colorful figure and flirtatious and many of the things that you see in Tracy Lord. But my grandmother fully understood that humans have weaknesses. In fact, rather celebrated that. But as my uncle said to me, you know, after a while, she came to value the importance of being Mrs. Philadelphia's story.
Talk a little bit about her life. I mean, you talk about going to Venice once. You're backpacking around Europe. And there are your grandparents hanging out with Jack Profumo, the disgraced British cabinet minister. She once got the Duke of Windsor to stand on his head because she wanted to see what was under his kilt. She sounded dazzling.
Well, she really was. Acquired a horse for a pound of caviar and a dirty joke every week for a year. Spectacularly good looking, physically daring. She did take her father's declining herd when he died against his will because he didn't think women should be involved with cows and turned it into what was said to be the most productive Ayrshire herd of its size in the country.
Yeah. She kept scrapbooks. She kept letters. She and her husband, they wrote to each other these unabashedly romantic, loving, needy love letters that you found. But also both your grandparents and your father had affairs. You went to visit your father in Nantucket.
And there ensued this weekend that I ended up spending with my father and a girlfriend I was completely unaware of in the house that my mother had bought for the family in Nantucket.
Things were not right. The alcohol consumption over generations, this high life, it's not Kardashian, it's Downton Abbey. In fact, you would miss Downton Abbey on Sunday nights, and one of your cousins or brothers said, well, we didn't miss Downton Abbey, we were Downton Abbey.
Right, yes. We weren't missing Downton Abbey, this was Downton Abbey.
But these cracks start to appear. Your father's drinking, you and your siblings saw it, there was an intervention. Then you realized he knew more about it than you knew.
I had always known that my father kept diaries. In my 20s, out of the blue, he said to me that he wanted me to have them when he died. And I said to him, well, why me? And he said, you're the writer. It was extraordinary, beautifully written. The quality of his insight and his savage criticism of himself was just startling.
Do you mind reading some of that? I'm trying to find it.
I take my diary down from the shelf and I begin to write when I am in moods of reappraisal and reform. Formerly, the moods were short, a day or two of depression or elation. This time, it's been much longer. The urge to create for the satisfaction of creating, runs strong during those moods. I would try to write a novel, perhaps built on the projection of my grandfather Montgomery's life. There is nothing which I find exciting, stimulating, except the things which I do alone, unanalyzed and unspoken. Work, perhaps. Beagling, reading, drinking, perhaps. I am cold in the sense of being dead to so much. I am now 26 years old. I live in a beautiful formal house with grounds which I cannot afford to keep, on a decaying quasi-baronial domain of great beauty in an encroaching suburb. I am a graduate of a law school and paid to practice law by a rather good, stuffy law firm, and I am quite mediocre about it. I am married to a charming, spoiled wife with whom I have little in common but background. We live our background. Our house is our two generations of money flowing into more of culture. This is no way to live.
What was a joy for life in your grandmother? Was that manic depression in your father?
I don't know how to define what he had, but it's clear from the diaries that he had a sort of cyclical mood imbalance. And when I looked into other aspects of family history, his grandfather had committed suicide in France during the war, and he too appeared to have cycles of elation and depression. And my father did believe, apparently, that his grandfather had been bipolar. Maybe it was a tendency in that direction. I just don't know.
And there definitely was alcoholism later, but this is also a man who was called by all the papers in Philadelphia, the quintessential Philadelphian, who would hop on a bicycle with just a couple of tools, take you biking all over the world. What do you think, learning more about your father, what impact has that had on you?
I feel that it's given me much more empathy for him. I loved him deeply, and toward the end of his life, I was deeply frustrated by my inability to persuade him that he should try to stick around a bit longer, that he was drinking himself to death, that he had a problem that he had refused to acknowledge. The fact is, I learned long after his death from the diaries that he understood his drinking long before the rest of us did, and wrestled with it for decades without even acknowledging that to us.
Having stepped back as the reporter that you are and taken this clear-eyed look at generations of a lot of wealth, what would you say about wealth?
What I would say, and the reason I called the book The Beneficiary, is that the more I looked at my father's life, and to some extent earlier members in his family, the more I thought about the weight of things that are passed on in families. Inheritance, not just of money, houses, land, but also of genes and values and culture. Just an excess of good fortune falling in one place and not in another. But it also shapes the decisions that people make or don't make at a point in their life where they may not really be conscious of how those things that are being passed on are shaping those decisions. My father made decisions early on in his life to plant himself in the place where he'd grown up, go into his great uncle's firm, to assume the place in Philadelphia society that they had. Those matter. Those shape your whole life. And how much did he know? And the thing that was striking to me about that diary entry is that he saw very early on, in a way that I don't know that I would have had I not moved away and gone off and become a newspaper reporter, the trap that was sort of laid at his feet.
Yeah. A snare, as you said, that he stepped into.
Yeah.
The whole thing is a metaphor alert. We watch this gorgeous estate,
Ardrossan.
We watch it and him crumble.
Not just that out of this charmed life came this self-destructive end, rather tragic, premature end, but he had devoted the last almost 10 years of his life to restoring this 50-room mansion to its original perfection, a house that many objective observers would say has no place in 21st century life. That place survived on the will and ego of my grandmother and to some extent my father, when virtually every other estate like that that had been built around the turn of the 19th to 20th century is gone, and they were bent on keeping it going for some kind of romantic commitment to what it meant to their forebears.
Yeah, and also to prevent what, at one point you have a line, both the house and that way of life and his way of life,
the Lord of the Manor,
were both becoming extinct.
Yes, absolutely.
We're here in your West Side apartment. books everywhere. But the four homes, I think, Nantucket, Bar Harbor, the estate in Philadelphia, South Carolina. Is it here?
No.
And why is that?
You know, I have his umbrella that, as I tell in the book, this crazy effort to restore the umbrella by sending it back to London.
Right.
And I have his wallet. But
isn't that funny? After generations of great wealth and great art and great things, and what you have is this book.
Yes, true. Well, the tax on the art, we can't afford that art anymore. But yeah, I feel like the book is kind of my contribution.
And what you want to take from it. I mean, you didn't want the
material possessions. I mean, I feel like you go out and you make your own life. And in a way, I think that's the story. Not to criticize my father, because he was enormously productive and did wonderful things in the city of Philadelphia. But you see this theme in Philip Barry's plays about what happens if you accept a life that's imposed upon you instead of going out and making a life for yourself.
Music from The Philadelphia Story. Janie Scott's beautiful memoir, The Beneficiary, is out today. It's here and now.